Hey guys, this is Jesus, and I want to thank the following Patreon listeners: Kevin Lovecraft, Fat Bald Hobbit, Brownie Davis, Adam Onokovin, MLKN, Memnochas, Christian Philip Schmidt, Christopher Durback, Timo Halasharu, and Sky Ark. Thanks for helping Gunslinger on this train to somewhere.
Listeners, and welcome back to yet another Fandible episode. We continue to do these despite requests from the authorities. We cannot be stopped, but don't think this is a rebel radio. We are in fact coming back to the world of Gun and Slinger. I will be your maestro, Dan, and here with me are my two players. First, the gun.
Hi everybody, I'm Dave and I'm a gun.
And the slinger.
Hi guys, I'm Jesus and I'm a slinger.
Now let me catch you up real quick on what's been going on in the past couple of
and
sessions.
Gosh, do those sound like euphemisms for, you know, like sex positions?
Yep.
You know what? We're gonna catch up on the session. So yeah, pretty much.
Slinger means thong.
Yeah. Those of you who have listened to the previous episodes may remember the deep sexual tension that you know really defined all the episodes.
I mean, that was mostly the gun. Let's be honest here.
It is mostly the gun. Again, we looked at our notes before starting the game, and one of them clearly reads the gun is horny.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, welcome back to the world of Gun and Slinger. It is a world in which the rule of nature has been twisted with a capital T. There are strange creatures that roam the night. The moon is alive and hates you. People have been changed by this twist. The world itself has become tainted by both the twist and by the growth of magic. Magic and the twist are not the same thing. One is good, the other is bad. I'm sure you'll figure out which is which as we go through the game. But into this world, a world in which we decided there are guns. There are sentient guns, or not necessarily sentient guns. There are effectively AI-guided guns. Mm-hmm. Most guns in this world have effectively an AI chip, and that allows them to effectively interface with the magic of the world and have all sorts of weird effects. So you can have like lightning guns and ice guns and fire guns and stuff like that. You just have to kind of like talk to the gun and convince it to let it do its thing. But among all these guns, there is one that's particularly odd, particularly strange, and that is, of course, the gun played by Dave, as this one is, in fact, entirely sentient and able to take action on its own. And this gun has, for reasons, become paired with a strange and twist-marked man known as Jeremiah, who is on a journey of self-discovery. Oh, sorry, no, a journey of revenge against the horrible creature that killed, devoured, and then sort of assimilated and used his family to torment and mock him. Good times. And this unlikely pair has been traveling the land in search of the thing that hunts, the thing that killed Jeremiah's family. As part of this quest, as part of this journey, they arrived at a town. They needed the Bloombog Forest. And the only way to get past the Bloombog Forest was to ride the Bloombog Express.
Straight through Spider-Town.
Straight through Spider-Town.
We have a minimum of eight legs. A minimum.
Yeah, minimum of eight legs and also a minimum of eight spiders per square inch while you were traveling through it. So yes, you did not have the cash on hand to just get a room in the train, so you basically hired yourselves out as mercenaries and joined an already existing mercenary troop consisting of four people who you have already spent some time with. The leader of the mercs, Morana, who is a woman with fiery red hair. Also, just her hair is on fire. It looks like it is, in fact, a flaming hair. And she has a pair of revolvers that also shoot just flames. They're effectively tiny, handheld, yet incredibly powerful magic flamethrowers. You've got Zephyr. Zephyr is a tall and rangy individual, nearly 7 feet tall, bit of a country hick accent, and he's got a pair of guns that, well, last time you saw them in action, seem to shoot tornadoes, so that's cool. And you also met Argus, who has a shotgun, is short, stocky, and not a dwarf, despite all appearances, including the beard and all the leather he wears. He is covered head to toe in leather. And when you saw him in action, we'll describe where you saw them in action recently, he has a shotgun that shoots spikes of ice rather powerfully into the air. And finally, the last of the four mercs was, of course, Seraphine. Seraphine, when you first met her, she is slender, almost to the point of painfully thin, and very much of a goth look, with always dressed in black, very conservatively, and pretty much all her skin was always covered, never really revealed much. And you also knew that she was, unlike the rest of the mercs, she was what's called a snapshot. Snapshots being those people who do not apparently have a magical gun. They just have good old regular revolvers and pistols shooting lead bullets. The good advantage of those is that you don't have to convince them. You don't have to talk to them about it. If you just want to kill a motherfucker, they will just do that.
Give me a pound for remembering that, because that's the one thing I remembered that we created, and I really like the...
No, that's something you created.
I remember, I remember, like, the arms race of, like, yeah, magical guns, and, like, snapshots are like, what about guns that just work?
It's like, they just work.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with the magical guns. It's like, the only way to get the magic working on them is to effectively give them almost pseudo sentience. So the gun itself is the one doing the magic, not just you. But because of that, it needs to be advanced enough that you kind of have to go like, no, really, like, there are spiders, please shoot the fire. Versus, and the point of this in universe was that the people that made the guns were able to effectively put in a low level basic sort of like, you're less likely to accidentally shoot your neighbor because you got drunk or angry. Yeah. It made the guns effectively less dangerous.
That's how you know it's a fantasy, Dan.
Exactly. That's why steps. Exactly, because of magic, right?
Yeah, we took steps to make guns less likely to kill innocent people.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then we also made them able to, like, again, just shoot magical energy and destroy an entire town if should you be able to, like, you know, justify yourself to the gun.
The town is full of spiders.
Well then, in that case. But yes, and there are people, again, snapshots, who just use regular guns that don't have these powers. But also, these people tend to be mistrusted because of that, right? Yeah. A snapshot, generally, the impression that it gives people is some kind of assassin, because you're using, you know, these are quote-unquote ghost guns. These are the untraceable weapons of this world.
Because you're depending on the morality of the person. People can't be trusted. Guns can be trusted.
Exactly. and so you joined the trade.
They're the epitome of guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Exactly. So you joined this mercenary crew temporarily as a way to pay for your passage through the Bloombog Forest. And you had a couple of adventures during that. I believe the first night there were spiders. There were spiders, as we've mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Giant spiders.
And small ones, too. Yep. Like, just all kinds of sizes of spiders. Yep. And it was your job to be on the roof of the train car while it was going through Spider City.
Oh, and there was that really cool detail where there were parts of the train that would flip up.
Yes.
So that...
Because you are... Like, again, the world is vast and huge, and even though the trip through the Bloombog Forest takes the better part of a week, you are flying through that.
So there are parts of the roof of the train that, if you're on the surface of the train, they would flip up to make, like, makeshift barriers, effectively because you're going so fast that, like, the wind branch could, like, kill you.
Exactly. Yep. And, like, when you were on the roof, like, there were carabiners, basically, that you would
tie
yourself in, et cetera, et cetera. Like, this is a standard thing. This is how it works. Like, you take the train. This is why the mercs are there. They will be on the roof
fighting
the spiders.
This is the fucking movie, though. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a move. Like, that is just...
And so you survive. You survive the night of the spiders, which, you know, with relatively few scratches. And you and the rest of the mercs got to kind of hang out and bond a little over just the fact that you murdered all the spiders together. And then the next day, there was a bigger problem. Because while the train could deal with the spiders and the spider webs well enough, it did run into something that actually managed to tangle it and all but derail it entirely. And it was these roots, these strange, twisted, magical roots, which in the world are well known. This is a twist, just effect, a twist magic thing.
Mm-hmm. This is you, Jesus. You came up with this.
Yes, I did.
Yes. These dark roots that have spread throughout the land in different places, they are specifically very well known for having destroyed the town of All Paths, which was the biggest town known in the area, and it was it is also now known to have been completely destroyed and devoured by the roots. All Paths still exist, and you have reasons to be there, but you are not there yet. Yeah. But
as
these
as we recall, the old All Paths is now replaced by roots. Recreations of the town made of roots and duplicates made by you, David, which basically duplicate the people that were originally there that were killed by the roots.
Yep. And I remember the roots are not overnight. The roots are literally the result of like people just not listening to the warnings of each other. Mm-hmm. Like you see them coming. It's like, hey, the roots are coming. And like they're unstoppable, but also they're very manageable if you just work together. Mm-hmm. And like, hey, let's go chop off the roots every week. Like, okay, cool. But what happened to All Paths is like nobody listened.
Yep.
And it is, gosh, I really wish it was like a metaphor for something like the inability of maybe like a group body of people or a government to like respond to a growing problem.
Thankfully, we don't have that problem. We don't have that problem nowadays. No,
100% that are corrupting and entangling. Anyways, I'm sure we'll come up.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Well, anyway, these same roots had
not a political game.
Nope, had managed to get into the deep dark forest and had effectively formed a barrier preventing the train from going any further. And once the train was stopped. Well, there's a reason the train usually is going very, very fast to the Bloombog Forest, and it's the fact the Bloombog Forest is filled with all sorts of shit, all sorts of nasty twist creatures that immediately said, hey, the buffet is served, and started having fun around the oddly stopped train. So you effectively went out into the woods to figure out where these roots were coming from and see if they could be cleared out. Long story short, you were able to do that with the help of Seraphine. You went deep into the woods following a trail of magic, effectively, or rather of twist, and you found a clearing in which several of these roots were sort of there and wriggling, and there was a gnarled and twisted stump in the middle of the clearing. You engaged these roots in combat as the roots produced duplicates of yourselves. And you managed to murder a whole bunch of them. And as part of that, you ran into Seraphine, who turned out to be actually also twist-marked like Jeremiah. And she actually had those same roots going through her skin. She has somehow become infected effectively with these roots. And that granted her some level of power or control over them. Not a lot, but enough that she was able to kind of like move through them and sort of keep them somewhat under control while she was there. But she was very clearly not powerful enough to stop them entirely. So she joined with both of you to destroy the core of the roots in that area. And she was able to expose that core. You then, Gunslinger, were able to pew at it to the point, I believe the effect was that you sort of called a sort of sphere of like moon silver around it that just like crushed it and became just a little pellet that fell down. And in order to produce that power, you kind of had to milk Jesus's emotions. You had to get him to cry. over his family, so that was fun. But you did apologize for that later that evening.
The
so
power of emo.
Yeah, the power of emo compels you.
But the power of emo did, in fact, work.
Yeah.
And so you were able to stop the roots from continuing to spread, and you brought Seraphine back.
I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of, like, the power of emo. Like, do you remember when you were a child and your father brought you to the parade?
Yeah, so you were able to escape from there. You met with the rest of the mercs who had come out looking for Seraphine. And with them, also, yeah, so you started to make your way back, and you realized you didn't quite know how to make your way back because you had just kind of like flown out there in a sort of like magic slash twist infused fugue.
Yeah.
Just following out there. And like you got where you were going, but then you realized you had no idea how you had gotten there. But luckily you were able to whistle for your trusty steed, your luggage, which slammed out of its containment, and came through the woods, found you. It appears to be nigh unstoppable, as we've established.
Because it is made of stuff.
Yeah. And describe the horse.
So your steed, your trusty horse is, effectively a golem made out of all manner of trash and luggage and containers and boxes and some chairs, a guitar, just random bric-a-brac.
It's very much, I remember we invoked Scud, the disposable assassin.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And it has the special ability to collapse into a pile of crap. and then...
So don't we all eventually.
Yeah. Exactly. And so it was mostly kept in the luggage compartment until needed. And when it did come back out of that luggage compartment, first of all, it blew its way out.
There's no evidence of that.
No, there's plenty. There's a huge gaping
no evidence.
There is a our horse sized hole. Yeah.
Also, you noticed that it had some new luggage attached to it. Like it seems to have assimilated some of the luggage of other passengers into itself.
Okay, that's all circumstantial.
Yep, no evidence of that.
And we did also establish that it you know how horses like sugar cubes. So your steed likes lost socks.
That's right.
And so
our horse has more background than both of our characters combined.
Riding on your steed, you were able to meet the rest of the mercs and make your way back.
And as I recall, they were convinced we were dead.
Oh, yeah. No, the mercs did not come out looking for you. They came out looking for Seraphina because Seraphina snuck out. She did not tell them where she was going. You both... just ran off, literally ran off into the woods with a flashlight. It's all they saw. So they're like, well, those guys are dead.
Yep.
And then like 15 minutes later went like, where's Seraphina?
We care about her. Where'd she go?
Exactly. And so they came out to look for her. And thankfully you had her. She was unconscious. But Dave, you had cast an illusion on her to cover her veins.
Yep.
Because she had specifically asked you to please not tell the rest of the mercs about her twist touch.
I get it.
And then you made your way back to the train. You got some rest. You had a little bit of heart-to-heart, and then you got some rest overnight. And now we are caught up back on modern present day. It is now the morning after. The train has now been moving. The tracks were repaired last night. I believe we did see the track repair beast. Which is kept in one of the train cars
That's
near the
right.
start.
Right, there's like a monster that does
there's,
that.
There's thing. Effectively a double-wide furry hippo. You only saw its front-facing side, but you could see that as it effectively like eats the tracks. They go into it, and then from somewhere behind it, you were fortunate not to have that particular view.
Mm-hmm.
Just pristine new magical tracks are laid. You also did not witness how it is removed from these tracks somehow, but point is the track beast fixed it and everybody else was like, oh yeah, that's the track beast. Like I mean, how else would you lay down tracks if you don't have a track beast?
Are we talking about a DJ? That's what it sounds like. Like, yo, I love this beast's new tracks.
Yeah. and so it is now the next morning, as before, you know, the danger in the Bloombog Woods is mostly at night, which means that during the day, you all have sort of free reign, more or less, over the train, and you get to either rest or relax or do whatever you want before things usually tend to get hairy later in the evening. So as the sun rises and the train chugga-chugga-chugga-chuggas along, where do we find our gun and slinger?
Well, after, like, how soon is it after we came back?
You came back last night. You had a full night's sleep. It is now morning.
Okay.
Also, your if you have any twist, you know, lower down by half, rounding down. If you have any, I believe you gain some by resting some connection points. I believe you gain some connection points by resting. It should say so on your character sheet, Dave. Mm-hmm. But feel free to mark those down as well.
Okay.
And also, before we started, we gave y'all some braids, and we spent them, and you both have a some minor advancements since mm-hmm. last time. So I believe Dave has a new rune, and yes. The slinger has a new word.
Yep. Right. I mean, I should.
Yeah, you can feel free to reveal those or not as needed later on.
Yeah, I'll just say right now, my new one is hope, because first off, I hope that I can save my family, but also I hope that despite everything, like. We joke about me being a monster and not caring about anybody else, but, you know, in the end, I want to make sure people who are twisted can be saved. I saved Serafina. I can save my family then. That makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. And so what's your, what is ability that you're discussing? Because if somebody is jumping in just now, having not heard the first one.
Okay, so I don't recommend. Go back, please.
Wait. We are the worst people to say that.
I mean,
we do
fair
that
enough.
All the time.
I have certain words associated with my character that when I invoke them during a particular action, I give myself otherworldly abilities associated with that. That basically, it's not really an automatic success, but it definitely helps with any action I'm trying to do.
Right, because you effectively allow the twist show its power, because you are twist touched, and
yes.
you effectively embrace that darkness, embrace that twist, but it does effectively be whatever the twist does is shaped by the word capital W that you use to sort of affect it.
Yes, so my initial word was rage, because I'm an angry man.
And you still have that.
I still have that, but I also have hope. That is another word I could invoke for depending on a circumstance.
Exactly. And when you sort of lean into the twist, yeah, something badass, basically twist-related badassery happens. Mm-hmm. It's usually pretty good for you and bad for whoever you were aiming at. But as you said, you have to embrace a twist.
Yeah, so basically it comes at a price that if I'm not careful could literally consume me.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have a new, what is it called?
A rune.
And a rune is basically a concept or a couple of concepts that the gun wants to embody. And previously, my only runes were guidance and guile. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to guide people, not just the gunslinger, but others. And guile, as in, I understood the trickery was necessary. My character, my gun, is not a violent gun. Violence is only the last piece of a puzzle if it needs to be set down. And my character, my gun is a peace gun. He's an agent of peace, and ideally wants to strangely settle things without getting fired. So guidance and guile made sense, and in upgrading my character, I decided that the gun was also going to be protection and peace, really finalizing and rounding out this idea that the gun wants to be able to protect and nurture and in endeavor to create peace and maintain health as an outcome for whatever conflict they come across, as opposed to having to put a hole in someone, which the gun can always do, but that doesn't mean it's always right.
Exactly. And as the gun is a creation of magic, these runes also define effectively what you can do with your magic, because you're a gun, right? You're not a person. You don't have hands or anything else. So the way that the gun interacts with the world is entirely through its magic. It blinks about, it teleports, it talks into people's minds, it can, you know, kind of float a little bit, kind of do its thing. But every little thing it does is magic.
Every little thing it does is magic.
Exactly. And so these runes effectively shape that magic. So anytime Dave as a player wants to do something weird and magical, it has to match one of those now four concepts that he is tied to.
And I'm sorry, as one of your closest friends, I do believe I see in your eyes a genuine disappointment that my character that I chose in a high fantasy game run by you, Daniel Rodriguez, who is always down for the crow nuttiest, bringing that term back.
There's a reason I went full Beetlejuice in the last episode, but continue. Yeah,
but like Dan clearly was like, oh, you're choosing the most mundane concepts?
No, go for it. Okay,
and I'm like, yeah, but what if I nudge somebody and make them more happy? And you're like, you could, pinching the bridge of your nose, like, you could literally summon a floating castle full of fire demons. And I'm like, yeah, but what if everybody finds that joke, like, super funny?
Also, yeah, no, you can still do the fire demons. You're just going to be, like, really focused on protecting.
protecting the fire demons, actually. Fire demons, good guys. A lot of people don't think that.
Exactly. So then, it is now the morning after. Where do we find our gun and our arslinger?
So it's the morning after.
Yep. We've had, had a proper night's sleep, or whatever it is the gun does. I believe we established that basically you spent the night like blinking from place to place throughout the train, kind of just like watching people, like observing humanity is basically what you did. Yeah,
absolutely. Like the gun is, he's not reminiscent or jealous of humanity, but he is appreciative of it. And so the same way that many of us would doom scroll through social media, the gun just, like you said, blinks from place to place, watching people live their lives after this really horrifying occasion, and doesn't go to like the other mercenaries. He goes to like the train cars and the dining car and, you know, where the engineers are, and just quietly hides and listens to conversations. This was a momentous occasion. It was a terrifying occasion. And regardless of the fact of how the gun feels about the extremely wealthy being transported through the wastelands and the forest, not all of them are, you know, despicable, wealthy barons. A lot of them are just people. And that's the snippet of a life that the gun, that Cassidy wants to just hear about. And that's what calms him down and makes him feel good.
While the gun is doing that,
beating the homeless.
No, no. Jeremiah, wakes up, has a nice cup of coffee, and then he, has another cup of coffee, the Irish version, where he just sits back and just enjoys the train ride.
The Irish version to steady your hand after the first cup of coffee, because it shakes a little bit.
It balances it out, 100%. Yeah, so I'm just there relaxing. I know the gun is gone, and as he knows the gun enough to know that the gun's probably people watching or people listening.
It's morning now. Are you still out there, or have you returned back to the room by now?
No, I think, the gun has returned and is in the windowsill of the train car, of the small booth or, what would you call it? The
cabin.
The cabin.
Yep.
Jesus, Mother Mary and Joseph.
It's been
the cabin. Yeah.
Looking out the window like a dog, but it's a gun.
Gun dog. Yeah. I'm also looking out the window, just, you know, pondering everything that happened the night before. This has been I'm assuming the guns were there with me.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, yes. Well, last night was interesting.
It was eventful. It was.
Now, Dan, quick question. Have we ever seen people
because we saw Serafina, but have we met other people that were twist infected like ourselves?
In the past, yeah. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, there are twist, being marked by the twist is not entirely unusual. Like, it's still definitely a minority of people. But it's one of those things where, like, it's not well regarded. Like, given all possible options, people would prefer to not be around other people that have been marked by the twist. But that said, people understand it kind of just happens. It's just the world you live in. Mm-hmm. That said, yeah, there are types of twist markings that are more problematic than others. Like, for example, the issue that Serafina had with hers is that she has been touched by these roots, which are, in fact, very well known. When people see these roots, they have distinct, they have heard about them, and they have a distinct opinion about them, and that opinion tends to be fairly poor. Okay. So seeing somebody with those same very identifiable roots through their skin would probably lead to her having some bad experiences.
Fair enough. Okay. So, yeah. All right. Then.
But you, while you are, for example, twist marked as well, and it really only shows at night when, like, your sort of bioluminescent hair shows, it'll get some looks, but it won't get you run out of town.
Yeah, so basically it'll be like Mofino, like her hair is literally on fire, but people are like, okay, that's weird.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Okay. She gets some looks, but nobody's running her out of town.
Okay, makes sense. All right, so, exactly.
It's not X-Men where if you are different, you are immediately hunted. Like, no. It's a weird world, and people are kind of like, and sometimes you kind of get a little weird on you, and you can't get it off, you know?
So there, I'm drinking my Irish coffee. It's like, you did... Just so we're all on the same page here. No words about Serafina to anybody else, right? We're on a trust basis here.
No word? Obviously.
All right.
She helped us do conceivably the impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, by ourselves, we would have tried to shoot our way out of that.
Yep. That's about right.
It might have worked, or... we might have just been too, well, by the perspective of everyone on the train, one person with one light disappearing into the darkness forever.
Mm-hmm.
So if she wants it to be secret, then yeah, so be it.
That's perfect sense. Also, perhaps we should work on our communication skills in the future.
Are what?
Communication skills.
Thank you. Because you definitely did not pronounce that right the first time.
That's why we don't communicate in the first place, because you kept correcting what I say.
That's a bad foundation. I'm just
saying. Let's start again. When we went, we just left the train to try to solve the problem. We didn't communicate it with the rest of the crew, so they just assumed we dead. Mm-hmm. So if Serafina hadn't gone, they would have just left us probably or something.
Mm-hmm.
So in the future, perhaps we should say, like, hey, we're going to try to solve the problem. Don't just leave. Or something along those lines would be nice to say, maybe.
And
Jeremiah.
Yeah.
We do that. We get to our destination. What do those gun hires tell other people? What do they tell them? Stories of a gunslinger, a lone wanderer that they've never seen before, wandering off into the darkness with his talking gun, and then coming back victorious, stopping the unstoppable. And he just happens to be on this train. And now in this town, they go to the saloon, they go to the whorehouse, they go to the bathhouse, they go to the courthouse, they go everywhere. And your legend spreads. Who comes looking for us? Who comes looking for you? Maybe. Next time, conversation is not the issue. It's maybe we need to put people's attention in another direction. Because maybe the problem was people saw us leave at all. Because if we go charging off into the darkness every time, you know what that's going to get us? A bounty.
A bounty?
A bounty.
How would that get us a bounty when we solve the problem?
Not from the cops. Eventually, we are going to disappear into the darkness and take care of something that is someone else's interest. Maybe the best thing to do is to tell everyone that Serafina saved our lives. And we are two fools that ran off, cocksure, inexperienced. We can. You can. I can. Working together, we can do incredible things. And we did the right thing. We're with a team of mercenaries whose job, livelihood, is that they are effective. And we just showed them up. Do you really think that they're all happy about that? We're going to leave. This team of mercenaries will not have the people, the person, the gunslinger that wandered into the darkness and slayed this unfathomable beast. What do you think they're going to say? They're going to say they did it.
Then let them. Why should we care?
We should help them say it.
That seems like a lot of effort.
You know what's more effort? Mm. One of those guns being pointed at us so that we stay silent.
That'd be unfortunate. For them.
No, it wouldn't. Because we did the right thing, but they're doing right by them. And you won't have me risk. You won't have me to rise my sights against them. They're mercenaries, Jeremiah. You had to know who you were getting involved with.
Cassidy. Your name's Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
Cassidy, here's what I see from my perspective. We became mercenaries when we chose to get on this train, to fight for this train.
Mm-hmm.
We had a job to do, protect this train. We did that job. I don't care where we show up or something. We didn't care about any of that. We wanted to solve the problem so we could keep going. If a mercenary came out of nowhere and said, like, I feel bad because you upped us in a particular cast, I'm going to shoot you so I feel better myself. Fuck that particular mercenary. We shoot him in the head. If they don't have problems with us, we move on. We're going to here for one train ride. Why should we care if a mercenary has a temper tantrum?
What if it's Serafina?
Serafina's fine.
Serafina's the only one who knows what happened.
And Serafina saved our lives and we saved her life. We're good.
And if Serafina later on gets worried that someone's going to find out that she wasn't the heroine everyone knows her to be? She doesn't know us?
Okay, maybe we're on two different pages here. I'm not going to go around saying I'm a hero or anything like that.
Neither of us will.
Yeah, so I'm not going to... We're not going to go around saying we're the heroes of the train station or anything. If anyone else, sure, Serafina helped us out. Or Serafina did the deed. I don't care. Let her do the thing. Although, here's the thing. We don't realize... Maybe you're not realizing. Maybe Serafina doesn't want the attention. Remember, she's twisted and has the roots, which make people a little hesitant to deal with her. Maybe she doesn't want attention at all. Do you ever think of that?
You know what, Jeremiah?
Mm.
This is where you're right.
It happens on occasion.
We do need to work on our communication. With Serafina. We need to know what she wants.
Oh.
I mean, as a storyteller, I can remind you that last night, she was very specifically asking, please don't tell them. And she was like covering up her marks on her arms. And before she effectively passed out, she very specifically begged
you
both.
So she would definitely not want her attention on herself.
Right. She very much begged you both to not tell the other mercs about her. Like, as you found out, they apparently don't know what's going on with her. And she very much wanted them not to know.
Okay. Then,
but that's the only discussion that you had with her before she then passed out.
Then if anyone asks, we found her on the way back.
Great. Here's the thing. You've passed out multiple times, mostly through intoxication, with my presence.
Fair enough.
Would you say that the last things that you... would you say that the last things that you said to the people who picked you up and sometimes robbed you and sometimes put you back, at least at the foot of the hotel that we were staying at, would be the most binding final words you would want from that night? Serafina, we should talk to her. Fine. We should talk to her and get more than just something she says before she passes out.
Fair enough. Let's go and make sure she's awake and then figure this out. It's been a night. She's probably awake by now.
Sure.
All right.
We're going to see Serafina. As you stand up to do this, and I'm assuming you holster your gun.
Of course.
Rather, the gun. He's not yours.
Yeah, the gun. I would say the gun teleports into my holster.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And as you're standing up, there's a knock at your cabin door.
Shoot him.
It means just ultimate violence.
Yeah, Jeremiah goes to the door.
That moment in Red Dead Redemption 2 where you accidentally hit shoot instead of talk, which happened way too much.
Not just shoot him, but shoot him with the magic gun that can fucking kill God. Like,
yep. Jeremiah goes to the door and opens it. Just opens it freely, not expecting a shot to the face.
So there is, as you open the door, there is a young man. He is relatively short, maybe 5.5 feet tall, skinny with sort of a patchy beard. And he is wearing what you recognize as one of the engineer outfits. You saw several of the train engineers out last night while everything was happening and the train was stopped and they were trying to clear the tracks and everything. It turns out the train has a substantial staff. Keeping this thing running requires multiple engineers, security teams, probably weird magical specialists in different parts. This is, after all, a magic train and runs on magic. But what is at the at
wizard
the door?
Hat.
Exactly. What is at the door, though, is again this young man in sort of it's kind of like a jumpsuit basically with orange markings on it.
But it's traditional, stripes, right? Because it's old-timey, 1800s. Yeah,
exactly. And he had his fist raised as if to knock on the door once more. And he looks surprised and looks up at Jeremiah as the door. Oh, great. Sorry. I was hoping you were already awake. I need to check your cabin last night. Everything that happened. Look, there's stuff been breaking ever since. There are things that crawled on. And he holds up what looks to be it's a mechanical box with several sort of antennae and several little attachments kind of dangling off from it, and it is beeping softly, and he kind of holds it up as if he would expect you to obviously and he starts kind of moving as if he thinks he's just going inside.
Stop right there.
I need to check your cabin.
What does that do?
It checks the cabin. It goes beep if something's weird. I mean, that's about as much explanation as I'm gonna give you unless you have an engineering degree. Do you have an engineering degree?
Not particularly.
Right. Please let me in so I can check. Otherwise, I mean, if you don't want me to check, fine. I can jot it down here that you denied the check. And if you get eaten overnight, well, I guess that's that.
Okay, that's compelling.
And Jeremiah, fine, go inside.
And the guy goes in and you see him sort of effectively do a sweep of the cabin. It's not a huge cabin, so it doesn't exactly take him half an hour. Mm-hmm. But he kind of holds the thing up. He looks under the cushions. He passes it across the four different walls of the room.
He pulls out the underneath the cushion bedding thing that already folds out. He pulls out a storage container and a shelving. We're what the fuck? That was there the entire time. We could have been storing more stuff.
Yeah, you do discover a few things about your cabin as he's in there. There really wasn't exactly an onboarding or anything when you came in. There's that's your room. But yes, he at one point he pauses and there is a sort of a a rug, not really a rug, like it's like fabric, you know, on the floor. Mm-hmm. And he kind of reaches into a corner, pulls it back, revealing what appears to be some kind of hatch on the floor of the cabin. And he just kind of like taps it, checks it, makes sure that it is properly locked. He kind of like moves his fingers around the borders of this hatch, as if kind of checking that it is still sealed. And then he nods to himself, like looking satisfied. All right, good. Looks like you're clean. And he takes out a little sort of a notepad, just makes some markings on it, just a little scribbly. All right, thanks. That'll be enough. That's good. If anything just starts moving, if anything breaks or anything, look, my name's Jerome. Just ask any of the staff. They know about me. I'm pretty much in charge of these three cars. The rest of the staff is over there. Right, anyway, I gotta go.
Quick question. Was that hatch always there? Like,
yeah, they all have a hatch. That's how we get down to service the underside of the train if we have to.
Oh, all right. Just
yeah, they're all like that. They're locked. Like, none of this stuff is ever opened unless we're at the station. But you know, I had to check. We don't usually stop in the middle of the forest, much less for like almost an entire night. There was stuff crawling all over the train. You have no idea what I've been up to. I have not slept. Mm-hmm. And then as he's kind of like going and like moving the little box in his hand, it makes like a fuck. All right, here we go. And he's rushing down the hallway.
Working here must be very stressful.
He said he's the head of what, engineers?
No, he's just an engineer. He's in charge of these three. Sort of like three. He like motioned at the general area.
Yeah, three
cars. Or so, yes. Yeah.
Well, at least we know we're clean, whatever that means. Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, Jerome rushes off down the hallway to deal with whatever engineering emergency he has just detected.
What are we doing? Right, Seraphina. All right, let's go talk to her.
Yeah, not eaten at night. We should probably look at that, maybe tape? Tape it down?
It's already literally bolted down. I think we're good.
Yeah, I mean, it does look fairly well sealed. And he seems satisfied and put the rug back.
Yeah, engineer's fine. Like, listen, he was a bit snippy, but he's right. We don't have engineering has a degree.
Yes, it has. Okay, let's go talk to Seraphina.
Right, whatever. All right.
So you make it out of your cabin and you head down. So the train car with the rest of the mercs is just one train car down. You know, you didn't stay directly with the mercs because their space is already kind of like set up. So you just had an extra cabin. But they are just one train car down. And as you move to the next train car where their quarters are, you see that their doors are open. They each have their own little cabin. And you see, you know, there's basically two on each side and the doors are open. And you hear the voices of Morana and Sephir coming from one of the rooms. In fact, you recognize that their voices are coming from Seraphina's room.
Mm-hmm.
And as you, presume, approach the room, you see that inside it are actually all four of them. So it's a little crowded in there, but you can at least, you know, you can be in the door. And you see that all four mercs are there. Seraphina is still in bed. She's never looked the healthiest. She's always been very, very, you know, almost deathly thin.
She's fucking Lydia Dietz from
right. Pretty much, yeah. Definite Lydia Dietz vibes.
Beetlejuice. There we go.
Beetlejuice, yep.
Thought I had muted you. Yes, exactly. Lydia Dietz from Beetlejuice vibes to her. But, you know, Lydia Dietz with a massive, hangover.
By the way, shout out to Winona Ryder if you want to be. You don't have to write in. We know you're a fan of the show. if you want to be part of the show for like a little guest spot, let us know.
Yeah, right, 100%. Exactly.
If you want to voice Seraphina, please.
Of course. my God. But I would lose my goddamn mind.
But yeah, Seraphina is in bed, and at some point over the night, your illusion, Cassidy, that you cast on her has faded. But she has, you know, put on her night clothes, so she is once again fully covered. No sign of her twist marks visible.
Are they those sick like fake tattoo long sleeves that people wear now? Like,
they're just black sleeves. Because like, she wants none of her skin to show.
Yeah. It says "Welcome to Flavor Town."
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, that's Sephir.
So as I walk in, I go, "Good morning, all."
And they kind of like look a little surprised. Okay, oh, hey. And Morana specifically kind of turns towards you, her flaming hair, you know, as usual, kind of.
Jesus.
Yeah, just is bright. But again, it does not, like, you don't get heat
it's
from it.
It's not real
yeah.
fire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You don't get heat from it. The roof is not burning. There is no smoke.
If anything, it's one of those like fake flame things you get from Spirit Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But boy, does it look real. She goes, hey, did you get some good rest last night?
Surprisingly, yes. I was very tired from last night, but wanted to check in, make sure Serafina was okay after last night.
And Serafina kind of looks up from the bed and gives a wan little smile. And is like, and I'm good. I probably shouldn't have headed out. And she kind of lowers her eyes, brings them back up, goes like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have gone out. I was lucky you guys found me out there. I don't know what came over me, but I really, really wanted to help. And I rushed out.
Yes. And you're lucky we found you passed out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was rough out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very grateful, that you found me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sephir and the other two, Sephir and Argus, the two gentlemen, they're kind of just watching this curiously. Sephir, as before, he's the first one that you met. He's always been
the super tall one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's super tall, and he's always been pretty friendly. Like, he's the first person you met mm-hmm. out of this group, and he's like, yeah, he's casually like gives you a smile, like, hey mm-hmm. guys. Argus has always been hard to read. He's definitely got those dwarven vibes, even though there are no dwarves in this world.
Yep. He's not a dwarf, but he's just very small.
Very small, stout, very stoic.
Giant beard. Covered in leather.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just very serious. And yeah, he kind of just like gives you the exact same look he's given you throughout the time mm-hmm. you've known him, which is just like wide-eyed, just like staring right at you.
Yep.
Lonely
Mountain vibes. Yeah, it makes sense.
Exactly. In fact, I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to listen to the previous episodes fully to know, but I don't know if you actually ever heard them talk. I don't think he has talked.
Has he? I don't remember.
I don't know if he's talked. I'm gonna just say probably hasn't talked. Okay. If he has, it's been like a quick rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But, you know, he's just there, like, he's hard to read. You don't know if he's angry at you, if he's sad at you, if he's happy, he's horny. Mm-hmm. You don't know. Mm-hmm. He's just, but
why
he is,
not all of them?
Exactly. Yeah. But he is very much there.
I love that Sephir is friendly. Seraphine is sleepy. Jerome is an engineer. And Argus is there.
Is undeniably
there.
Exactly. He is undeniably there. Mm-hmm. And Morana kind of like looks between Seraphine and you guys and nods and like, yeah, so what the hell happened out there? I know you ran off, and it's like I told you last night when I saw you, I'd ridden you off. I figured you were dead. Mm-hmm. And then Seraphina was gone, and we noticed she was gone around the same time that these roots just kind of started drying up. What the hell happened out there?
Hey everybody, this is Billy from Fandible Podcasting Network. Thank you so much for listening. We loved having you here. If you want to follow more of Fandible's crazy hijinks, go to our Twitter or Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at Fandible or at Facebook at Fandible. I know, we're creative like that. If you would like to do more and support us, please feel free to go to our Patreon and donate. Your donations help us go to cons, buy materials, and just keep our radio equipment working. Thank you so much, and remember,
the Ink Monster wants to eat you!